you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
What can I say about Jerry Kernian? That he's worked with John Hamm? That he's a 2-time Los Angeles Ovation Award nominee? We could talk about that. That he studied with Ian McKellen? That one day he hopes to grow up and be Jackie Gleason? That he's got the mover's curse? Yeah, we can talk about all these things. And we do. So, stop listening to me and listen to him. Here we go.
So, hear all about that. Go ahead, ask me a question. You start the interview, Jerry. Go.
Yeah, well, I usually do. We've met before? When did we meet?
Way back, and I'm not joking, way back in the late 1900s.
Okay.
I lived in L.A. for 6-8 months, something like that, in 1999.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And and I was friends with Matt. And so he was one of the people that I knew in LA. So, you know, he was like, hey, come hang out with me and my friends one day. It was, I don't know if it was a Saturday or a Sunday. You could say anybody. And I would be like,
yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, it's nice to see you again.
It's good to see you too.
Let's not let it be another 22 years.
Right. You're a little closer now.
Nothing sadder than the fact that we didn't get to all make it to Vegas for Super Bowl as we do this weekend, this past year.
Is that the annual? I know you guys always some kind of Vegas trip or something like that, but I didn't know there was a date and time.
Yeah, we go Super Bowl because, you know, even if you don't have a team in it, which most of the time, most of us don't.
Right.
You've got something invested because we bet on every silly thing, including, you know, will the quarterback shoelaces come untied?
Right.
And but it's just, it's such a fun weekend, and I think the last year, right before the pandemic,
yeah,
it was Glaive, Parati, Ross, and myself, and and Glaive had just been really ill,
okay,
really sick,
all right,
like to the point where he said he almost thought about not coming, but then he decided to come anyway, and now we're looking back on it, going, he had COVID,
yeah, he was patient
he
zero,
probably had COVID, yeah, and he brought it to Vegas. So first off, he's not invited anymore. And you know, but yeah, it really is. It's 3 or 4 days of nothing but find the target on who we're insulting at any given moment.
Awesome.
And it just switches to each person. Although mostly it lands on Ross.
I was going to say, cause Tim Parati's a hard target.
He is a hard target, but we have plenty.
Okay, sure.
We have plenty.
Sure.
Yeah, because he's such a nice guy.
He's the nicest guy.
He's the nicest guy.
Yeah.
But don't worry. He gets his jabs in, and then, of course, we turn it around on him, too.
Well, man, first of all, thanks for, you know, agreeing to do this. I really, really appreciate you connecting with me. And
you you must have sunk pretty low on your guest list to get to me. So I don't know. Dude, nobody wants to talk to me about what I do.
That's the whole point. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Well, because, you know,
bless you, and I apologize in advance.
Oh, hell. Well, I'm sure you've thought about this too, where you think, you know, most people who watch movies and TV or whatever don't stop and think, who was that guy who did this? Who was the girl with the information? You don't stop and think about it. You know, they're integral parts of the story.
Most people, you're right. Unfortunately, myself and a bunch of other guys I know that do what we do are tortured by that, and, you know, must look up every single person and then figure out who their agent is and why they're getting auditions and I'm not.
Right.
Right.
So it's definitely a yin and a yang. You know? But you're right. Most people don't do that.
But I'm sure you've also had those moments where you're talking to somebody, whether it's at a cocktail party or whatever, and it comes up and it's like, oh, what do you do? And you're like, oh, I'm an actor. And of course they say, what have I seen you in? And then you say, I did this and this and this. But I'm sure you've had moments where they go, oh my God, holy shit. Yes, I saw that. And you were this guy. And I loved you. I hated you. Or you died really well. And then all of a sudden it takes on this whole different importance for them where it did mean something. And, you know, that moment or that scene was significant, but of course it didn't stick with them in that way. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
No, that's absolutely true. And I have had that quite a bit. I mean, even recently. And it's very funny because again, the journeyman actor that right. you are, that I am, the Paradias and Matt, we don't think about it like that. We think about it like a blue collar career.
Yeah.
So when somebody's like, well, what have I seen you in? It's just the most arduous question for me because I always answer really sarcastically. And I'm like, oh, probably a milk carton or, you know, maybe the issue of Playgirl that I did when I was really down on my luck. But, you know, I always deflect.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if they're really interested, they'll push and I'll say something right. like, you know, some ridiculous sitcom that I did that
yeah.
means more than my bachelor degree or something. So.
Mine for a while was a bunch of shit that's been canceled. That's what you've seen me
that's
in.
Great.
A bunch yes. of shit that's been canceled.
you ever seen all those pilots that never made it? I was in those. Oh, I had great roles. Right. Great roles.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so all right. So I'm going to start it off this way since we're talking about this. Jerry Kernian, where may we have seen you?
Okay. Can I say the same thing? A milk sure. carton, a post Absolutely. Office, a back issue of Playgirl.
And, what year? And of course, 81?
Yeah. Oh, no, much earlier. I started early. It's 74, 75, I think it was.
The very hairy issues.
Yes, that's right. Back when everybody still had hair. And, you know, I'm trying to keep that alive.
Oh,
so.
My God.
You know, I guess if you watch television, mm-hmm. I've been on a lot of the television shows, mm-hmm. a lot of one-hour episodic sitcoms. Half hour single cameras, you know, everything from that to Hallmark movies
right.
to just pretty much anything, anybody that'll pay me to show up and not make me leave.
Well, you've had a pretty good run.
So far.
You have. It seems like you have done basically every procedural network episodic that's ever been made. It seems like.
Well, I tell you, Brian, I found a niche and I believe mm-hmm. that I'm one of the only ones filling it, which is I'm not usually the bad guy or the hero. I'm usually the guy that you think did it, but he's too dumb to have done it. And I filled that niche. And so I keep working in those procedurals because they always need one of those guys. He's kind of a red herring. You think in the first half hour he did it. And then you at about a half hour, 32 minute mark, you go, oh, no, he's way too dumb to have pulled off this crime.
Right.
And then they move on and go, you know. But I also my family loves to tease me in that every time I'm on TV, I either end up dead or in jail. And that's the plight of the guest star, you know, because they don't want to pay to bring you back.
No,
so
right.
they kill you or put you in jail.
And I do have that on here. I mean, let me tell you right now, first of all, it was fun looking you up. It was fun doing some research and finding some stuff on you because, man, you're the fucking man. You really are the man. Oh, man. I was a little,
you've been drinking already. I could tell.
I started.
yeah.
because one, your face is fucking fantastic. You have a fantastic face. I watched some of the stuff that you did, and I have to admit, I was like, I just want to punch this guy. And then there were other times.
You and my girlfriend are very similar.
But then there were other things that I watched where I was like, ah, oh, this poor bastard, you know?
Yeah.
And I do, like you said, I feel like you've cornered the market on those two aspects. Either you're a rat bastard or we mm-hmm. want to hug you. Is that pretty yeah. accurate?
I would think. Yeah, that's probably true. And sometimes both at the same time.
Right.
Which is, you know, that took years of training to accomplish that, to be able to be a rat bastard who you want to hug.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
No, it works. Believe it or not, it has gotten me cast sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. For everyone who's listening, I am talking to my friend Jerry Kernian. Am I saying, I'm saying that right, Kernian?
Absolutely.
Jerry Kernian.
You did that right as well. That's really good. That's all that training. North Carolina School of the Arts training. Huh?
You may have seen Jerry in Chicago Fire, FBI, Snowfall, Rebel, Rosewood, Last Call at Murray's, The Middle, Longmire, Bones, CSI New York, NCIS, NCIS Los Angeles, The Mentalist, Weeds, Grey's Anatomy, which you were almost nominated for an Emmy. It sounds like almost
I was.
Nominated.
I was put up for nomination. What they do, the TV Academy allows mm-hmm. the showrunners to put up 6 guest stars throughout, mm-hmm. you know, they pick 6 out of the season right. to nominate for the Emmy. So okay. Shonda Rhimes picked me that year and nominated me and sent me a case of champagne and a lovely, lovely letter. And I didn't get it because Ted Danson was, of course, a guest star that year on something.
Fucking
and
Ted
so I, yeah, it's a damn Ted Danson. God, if he only had a career.
My career would be so different if it wasn't for Ted.
Oh, we're all, I was up for Cheers. But it was such an honor just because, you know, Shonda is so prolific and what right. she does and the fact that and this wasn't like one of the first years of Grey's Anatomy. It was when Grey's Anatomy was 10 years in.
Right.
And so or I'm sorry, 6 years in. And so it was just really it was an honor to do that because at that time there were a lot of guest stars on that show that were names. And yeah. I had to beat out a bunch of names just to get that role.
I can only imagine. I want to talk more about it because obviously that was a very significant, you know, job episode point mm-hmm. in your career. Just to hit a couple other highlights. You may also have seen Jerry on Scrubs, Mad Men, which was a big hit, Knight Rider, Castle, ER, Ugly Betty. I could keep going. You've done some animation and VO, it seems like.
I have. I did a movie called Princess and the Frog for Disney. Mm-hmm. They have a TV series based on their movie called Tangled.
Oh sure.
Which I did a few episodes of that and mm-hmm. I did the first see I don't know whether it was the CD-ROM or it was the game, you know, back when games were on CD-ROM.
Yep.
Right? These massive games. They did Blade Runner. And I was the chief of police in Blade Runner.
Sure.
You know, way back when I didn't even know I'm not a gamer, so I didn't even know what it was going to be, but yeah, it was exciting.
Yeah, and for the sake of the show, you've got what I call some great you may have seen. Jerry has played driver a couple of times, bus driver, mm-hmm. boss, manager a couple of times, bartender, delivery guy, cotton candy man, security yeah. guard, customer, workman a couple of times, builder, but you've also been a series regular.
I have, yeah.
So you've been these kind of nameless occupation type characters that we tend to get so often. And yet you had a series for a short time.
I did. Yeah. It's weird with the name thing and it's changed a little bit now in that now when you get to a certain amount of credits, you know, they figure out what they can do instead of paying you. So they'll give you that instead of being just boss,
right.
They'll give you a name. And the name will have nothing to do with anything. I just, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact, I just shot last week an episode of Law and Order. And I was cast, you know, on self-tape, all that stuff right. that's going on now. And I was cast and had 3 scenes in it. But they didn't have guest star. They couldn't give me a guest star because they'd already given out their guest stars for that right. episode, which it turns out were like really pretty big names.
Yeah.
But they said, but we'll... we'll give him, they paid me and they paid my quote. And the character's name is Luis Ramos.
Okay.
Okay. Well, which is fine, except I'm not Hispanic. I'm mm-hmm. not a Latino. And when I got the audition, I was like, there's no way, but it did say any ethnicity.
Right.
But what they did is they just never mentioned my name in the whole episode. They just refer to me as the boss, you know, the construction boss. So, right. It's just their way of getting out of doing that, giving you some kind of identity.
And it's just, it is so interesting the way, I don't want to say the way that the industry's changed, but just the, because you know how the business goes. And what I was saying was it's so interesting how the business has shifted in that regard. Because, you know, we get into this and we start from the bottom like everybody else. And we're trying to work our way up the ladder up to a certain point. And, you know, and there are some people that have the mindset of, oh, well, once you get to guest star, you never do co-star again. Or once you get to series regular, you never come back this way again. How is that for you to hit and go, holy shit, I've got a, you know, I'm a regular on a TV series. And then when it ends, you know, what was it like for you?
Luckily, I had my series regular was one of my first TV gigs. So it's been all downhill from there. So there's the disappointment was built in. I did that series regular and then believe it or not, because I think the reason I got that whole series regular, it was a show for John Landis. John Landis had just come off a bunch of big movies and he was creating, and it was the first single camera comedy that USA Network was producing. And John likes his comedy fairly big, and as evidenced from Animal House and all his other movies.
Right.
So I think I fit into that, you know, pretty well. But then when that show was over, despite my credentials,
right,
I was too big for camera. I was too animated and such. So it took me a couple of years after that. I mean, I worked, but it took me a couple of years to start really consistently booking because I had to bring the performance down.
Gotcha.
And contain the performance for the camera.
Yeah.
And so I went through that whole thing. You know, I started again building up the credits, and then I got to that point where I had to start saying no to co-stars. And back then it wasn't a pecking order, but there was a pathway you followed. And when you did, and I did, I turned down quite a few jobs because they wouldn't go to guest star.
Right.
And that's been great. And then of course the strike hit and a couple other things. And so the business has changed and it continues to change. And then now with the pandemic,
right,
everything's changed. So I think you just have to, as an actor, as a journeyman actor, and this is all I do, besides teach, then you have to figure out a way to kind of change with it.
Right.
You know, and the role I did on FBI, the role I did on Law and Order, these were good things I would have normally gotten guest star billing for. But now they're just being, they got to pay for all the COVID testing and they got to pay for this.
Yeah, right.
And so their budgets are strained. And so it just, I don't know. I'm starting to kind of let go of that nomenclature and just go, a job's a job.
Yep.
It's putting that show in my residual base. And you know, there's no better show than Law and Order to have in your residual base because it never stops playing.
Right.
So I think I'm just kind of looking at it that way now. Of course, I always want the guest stars and want to be on a series again.
Of course.
But you know, this is what I do. This is how I make my living. So I'm going to take the work when it comes around. And so I love going in and doing those shows. The only problem is that he keeps a tight ship.
Yeah.
And if you show up on one show, then you got to wait 2 years before you show up on the other shows.
Right.
You know, like the whole Chicago universe. I did Chicago Fire. I did a guest star on Chicago Fire. And my agent in Chicago, I was in Chicago at the time doing a play. And my agent said, well, that's it for 2 years. Are you not going to be on Chicago PD or Chicago Med? Because they won't see you for at least 2 years because you had a big guest star.
Yeah.
And so it's just, that's just the way he runs it. And you got to respect that. Obviously,
I do.
He's doing something right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember that from living in New York as well. Where are you living there now that you're there? How long have you been in New York now?
I decided to come right about 3 months before the pandemic because I have impeccable time. And I really wanted to experience New York for all its glory and, you know, be able to go out to bars and see theater. And oh, my gosh.
And the zombie apocalypse.
I wanted to be here for the zombie apocalypse. That's really what it is. So I've been here just towards the end of 2019. I had actually left L.A. to go to Chicago to do a play that I had been involved with for about 4 years. It was the prequel to a show called Million Dollar Quartet.
Right, I saw that.
And it's called Heartbreak Hotel. And so I'd gone to Chicago to do that. We were hoping for a long run, but because we had a producer / director / creator and owner who was certifiable, he didn't make the right choices to procure us a long run.
Sure.
So we had a good solid run in Chicago. And then I did Chicago Fire and then booked a big, huge production of West Side Story at Chicago Lyric Opera.
Oh, great.
After that. But because of the Chicago Fire thing, I had talked with my agent in Chicago and my girlfriend and I, we probably would have stayed in Chicago a little while longer. But she goes, there's nothing There's nothing else here. There's really very little coming, and there's nothing else here. And so we decided to come to New York, where everything was going, you know, there was so much television going on.
Yeah.
And we get here, and then the pandemic hits.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So, all right.
But
so
it is starting to come back.
That's good to know. That's good to know. So let's talk about that then. So how has that experience been for you in New York City during COVID? And, you know, you go there with all these intentions, and probably you had some things lined up or at least set up to at least get you going, and
I did. Yeah. I just picked up an agent and a manager, and I did book and shoot FBI right before the pandemic. And then I booked an episode of The Good Fight the week before everything shut down. So I went to the fitting, and then the next day they called and said, no, you're not coming in. We're shutting down everything. So then my girlfriend and I went, we got in the car and drove south. My family lives in and around Atlanta and Alabama.
Oh, okay.
And,
sure.
Went down there what we thought was going to be a couple weeks while this whole thing blew over.
Oh my God.
And we were there till June. And we were there a long time, but there was absolutely nothing going on here, nothing going on at work at all anywhere. And then we came back here, got back here in June, and I had an audition, a self-tape out of the blue, because there was nothing between that time. And it was for a Hallmark movie. And I said, all right, well, what else do I have to do? So I put it on tape and forgot about it, and then ended up booking it. So I shot the first project back shooting on the East Coast after COVID. And it was in late July. And it was so weird because even though everybody was used to wearing masks and such, the protocol for a film set was not really established yet. So they were testing us. They were keeping us apart. They were, you know, the hair and makeup people looked like aliens. They were wearing full PPE, like the whole suit and everything. And it was quite odd, but fun and very interesting experience. And I was happy to just have something to go and work on.
Yeah, no joke. You
know? So I went up to Connecticut and quarantined for a week in a hotel room and then shot for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a bottle of bourbon and a 12 pack of beer and decided I wouldn't care what happened in those 3 days, you know.
But
it was fun.
How are things shaping up now? How is it?
Things have come back. You know, they figured out how to do it, obviously at an extreme cost. But they're shooting and they are testing the hell out of us, both for Good Fight and for Law and Order. I think I tested every day. I tested the day before I went, then I tested the day of the fitting, tested shooting days, everything.
Right.
And then even Law and Order, they have locators. So the day that I shot, they gave me a little locator and they said, put this in your costume. And that's for contact tracing.
Sure.
So if somebody does come down with it, they know who you've been near, who you interacted with. Yeah. And they keep you apart anyway, you know, because as an actor, you're in what they call zone A. And so they keep zone A separated, but you still meet, still people come up to you, props people and wardrobe and hair and makeup. And there's still people coming up to you and asking you things and saying, you got to go over here. So I think they want to know that, and rightly so. And they've kind of figured it out now. And they couldn't. I had luckily just got my second shot and been vaccinated when I did it. Yeah. Right. Good thing. And but I hadn't cleared my 2 weeks. But I thought, well, at least they'll ask me. But they don't even ask, because until everybody is vaccinated,
right,
it doesn't matter. They still have to do it this way.
Sure.
It's foreign. It's weird. It's an extra step. It's much harder on them than it is on us as actors, because I can't even imagine what that bill is, that extra amount of money that they put into that is.
No, it is. It's really insane. It's really insane to think about. It's like, I'm not sure how they're operating. I don't want to know. I'm just grateful for it. But
I am too, because they could have chosen the other route, which is nothing happens until everybody's fully vaccinated and we're out of this thing.
Right.
And boy, you know, I don't know about you, but I was going stir crazy. Even as an actor, you're used to at least having auditions, which bring you hope, mm-hmm. even if it's sometimes very delusional hope, it's hope. And you know, that yes. you're going to get a role, you're going to get a call.
Right.
And when nothing's going on, there's no hope. And then of course, theater, I have always kept my one foot in theater as well. And so that's always been a nice balance for me. If I wasn't booking television, I usually had a play that I was doing.
Right.
You know, and being employed by, and, or something that was in development. Mm-hmm. And because that whole side of it is just gone. That's gone.
Is there any word on that coming back? I've heard rumblings.
Yeah, there are. There's my girlfriend happens to work in Broadway general management.
Okay.
And, you know, with the fact that everything has been going, knock on wood, for the last couple months in the positive direction, I think they're starting to think about, okay, well, maybe September. Mm-hmm. And she said that she's heard that the productions are starting to book up rehearsal rooms good. For the summer. And so that's a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't know. It'll come back just like everybody else at its own pace.
Yeah.
And when people feel comfortable, but they're going to have to do the same thing as far as testing, at least with the actors and all. And
oh, for sure. You did Cirque du Soleil.
I did. I did two shows for Cirque du Soleil.
And, you were a clown. You've done clowning.
I have. Yeah. Yeah. And it was a lifelong dream of mine ever since I saw them back when they first started. Actually, when I was living here in New York for the first time, right mm-hmm. out of school, I saw one of their first productions and was just mesmerized and blown away. And I said then, I want to work with this company. So that and about, I don't know, 10, 12 years later, 10, 12 years of trying, it finally worked out. And I love that. I'm still on their roster as a, you know, a possibility wow. for some things, but it's a tough job. It's a fun job. It's a rewarding job. They pay very well. They treat you very well, but it's more like they take it out in trade.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
your body, you're doing 10 shows a week. And yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you're a bigger guy. You're mm-hmm. you're not your typical acrobat gymnast. And
no,
so
but, I mean,
wonder
always,
how that is for you.
Well, yeah. I've always done it. I mean, that's, I started, Matt Glave and I were in the same stage combat.
Really?
And went on, and I've been a everything from stage combat choreographer to mm-hmm. a teacher, to a stuntman. I've done stunts and
awesome.
All of that stuff. And I've yeah. done it my whole career, and I always knew I was going to pay for it. And now I'm paying for it. Now, every time I get up off the couch, I pay for it.
Oh,
I remember.
Yeah.
But I still, it's always been a big part of my comedy and my acting and my
right.
technique is physicality.
Yeah.
And using that physicality. And, so I think that's where the Cirque thing and the clowning, the European style of clowning, really, mm-hmm. I excelled at it because of that, because
yeah.
I was able to do that.
Which show did you do?
I did two shows. I did one called Banana Spiel, which was Cirque's, okay. Foray into vaudeville.
Okay.
And it was directed by David Shiner, who was the guy I saw in that first Cirque production.
Wow.
Just a brilliant. He's Bill Irwin's clowning
sure.
partner.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just outstanding. And so I did that. And then they called me a few years after that to go to Vegas. And I was in The Beatles' Love.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
you guys told me about
that. So I did that for about a year and a half.
That's
Vegas.
Incredible, man. Yeah, you must have been exhausted.
Yeah, no, it's but the good thing about them is that they know that. They know what they're asking of their artists mm-hmm. and they treat you with that in mind. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like you're playing on a professional sports team. You have yeah. they have three or four masseuses on staff. They have a huge physio department.
Sure.
They have a personal trainer. So I was working out with a personal trainer.
Right.
But there's nothing, let me tell you, Brian, there's nothing more humiliating than working out in a Cirque gym. It's both humiliating and invigorating all at the same time. Because you look around and you know, I'm a big guy. I'm a clown. Yeah.
Right.
But you still got to work out because you're doing all this, you know, I was doing a lot of physical stuff in the show and we're doing it twice a night, five times a week. And so you got to show up and you got to do your physical therapy and you got to do your personal training. But, you know, you're in that gym and you're just looking around at these girls doing splits, but not just normal splits.
No, like sure.
They're one leg is on the floor and the other leg is up on a chair.
Sure.
You know? So it made me very sad and very happy all at the same time.
More with Jerry Kernian in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Have you checked it out yet? Have you gone to queencitypodcastnetwork.com? You got to do it. I hope you did it. Don't make me come over there. I'll type it into your web browser for you. queencitypodcastnetwork.com, queencitypodcastnetwork.com. A lot of great podcasts on there. I mean, you're listening to this one. That one's awesome. Check out some of the others on there. You won't be disappointed. All right. Here's more with Jerry.
Let's see. We got all kinds of stuff here. We do. I'm also going to ask you this.
Okay.
Was Jackie Gleason an inspiration for you?
Oh, huge. You hit that right on the nose.
Probably
my biggest.
I was looking at some of your photos and there's something in your smile and in your eyes. And I was like, man, I wonder if he has ever tried to either write or campaign for, let me do a Jackie Gleason biopic or at least have a shot at it. Because I was like, man, you could do, like, you're it. I could totally see it. I could totally see it.
Yeah, he's always been one of my idols, and not just for his comedy and his physicality, mm-hmm. but also for his dramatic prowess. You know, he was just a brilliant, brilliant actor.
Absolutely.
And was one of those guys that could do it all across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I've actually played him. There was when I was here out of college, I did a dinner theater in some funny name, New Jersey.
Sure.
I don't know where it was.
Right.
I know that they would pay for us to bus out there and we do this show.
Oh,
and they wrote a show, a dinner theater show called the Mamas, Red Hot Mamas and the Papas. Mm-hmm. And I played Gleason and I came out and sang Call Me Irresponsible. And then I did Jackie's famous dance into a 180 flip
sure.
onto my back, you know, onto the stage.
God.
And so I've played it before. I love him. Matt Glave and I have actually talked probably three or four times in our careers about writing a Jackie Gleason show mm-hmm. and me doing it. And if it doesn't happen soon, I'm going to be playing him from a wheelchair. So I hope that one of us finds the impetus to get that project going.
Man. Well, you've done writing as well. You've directed as mm-hmm. well. You were also artistic yeah. director of a theater for a couple of years. This is why I say you're the man, you know, because you've covered a pretty broad spectrum of every aspect of the medium pretty much. And it looked like whether I can't remember if it was on your website or in your bio, you directed some commercials. I'm assuming
I did,
you've done
yeah.
commercials as well. So you've
come. Oh, I've done a ton of commercials. Ton. Yeah. And then back before the commercial strike, if you remember what happened in 2007, there was so much commercial activity going on. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to open up a little production company and start pitching small commercials under $500,000
right.
were the budget. But what I found was not only was it extremely fulfilling because you are in the project from inception to culmination, mm-hmm. but there was money to be made because sure. they jack up, they put so much extra, you know, fluff into those budgets.
Right.
So I could shoot these commercials and make a good amount of money producing and directing them. And I loved it. And I've done them as an actor as well. And that was, of course, back then it was very lucrative. Nowadays it's gotten a little less so, but,
crazy, you know, terrible.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I like all of that stuff. I mean, my thing about, I was having a conversation with one of my students last night and she said, well, what do you, since you do all of that, what do you like to do? What's your favorite thing? I said, the next thing. That's my favorite thing. The next thing. Cause that yeah. means I'm going to keep working.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be working again. And I think the reason I've kind of touched on all those different areas is because it stimulates me when, you know, if you're not doing, getting what you want out of TV or film mm-hmm. or even stage, then you can go do directing or then you can go back into do, I love the artistic directing
yeah.
aspect of things too, you know? And so yeah, whatever. I like it all.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say is that it seems like you have a tremendous passion for the art, no matter which element or aspect of it you're looking at, because you've had your hand in it at one time or another or still do. So
yeah,
with that, does the business aspect ever interfere with your love of the art?
By that, I hope you mean the hatred of the business aspect of it. And the answer is yes, of course. But it is a business. And the old adage of it, it's not called show play or show fun. It's called show business. And
right.
I think I realized early on that I had to treat it as such. And so I tried to always work that way. I've tried to always treat my relationships as business relationships and cultivate them or not sometimes. But I don't know. I guess I just feel like that's just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we are commodities. We are a product that we have to learn how to sell. And you have to also learn how to hire people that will sell you.
Sure.
Agents and managers. And so it is what it is. I hate that it's changed so much, because I did feel like there was the personal relationships that you had meant more a decade ago and before.
I've had a lot of people that I've been interviewing say that exact same thing.
Well, because the internet, now there's so many great things about the internet, and even in our business, and the fact that they can do these submissions over the internet and they can look at so many people and they're not opening up 8x10s over and over and over.
Right.
But that's also allowed casting directors to remove themselves one more step.
Mm-hmm.
And from, answering the phone and having those personal relationships with agents and managers. And, I think I always do better when I have an agent or a manager that will call and pitch me in, that will call. Oh, I know that person. Let me call. Listen, Jerry's right for this. This is why.
Right.
Rather than it just being a submission, a click button, But I know I'm not saying anything that every other actor doesn't already know.
No, I haven't really thought about that. In that respect, I guess, because it's been, 10, 15 years that we've been electronic with this, I'm just realizing this now as we're talking about it, that it's just, I think I've just accepted that's gone.
But it doesn't still, it really doesn't have to be that way. You can pick up a phone and people do answer the phone and people do still have conversations. And I try to treat my personal life that way. I don't just text people or just send them emails. I always try to call. And I feel like if we had a little bit more of that back in our business, it'd be better. It'd be a little more personal.
And I'm wondering, just like everybody else, as we go through this whole ordeal that we've been through for the last year plus, it's like, I'm sure you've had those moments where you're like, okay, what are we supposed to be learning from this? What are we supposed to be getting from this? Why is this happening? What's the lesson? And, the thing that I keep coming back to, and Colleen, my partner, and even, my friends, we have these conversations. It's like, I feel like we're supposed to be relating better, communicating better, connecting with each other as human beings, as neighbors, regardless of differences in opinion or thought or whatever.
Well, absolutely. And that desire is still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, for example, the platform we're talking on now, Zoom, it sprung to life immediately when COVID hit because of the desire to not just send somebody an impersonal text or an email, but to see them. See, because you can't, you can't tell tone through an email. You can't tell tone through a text. But when you see somebody reacting to what you're saying and they see how you say it, then tone all of a sudden is still part of the conversation. So the desire for that, those kind of personal relationships, is still really there. It's just that we've been allowed to get lazy as a society and rely on these other things. Right. Yes. And that's where we're at. And I hate to say it, but I feel like self-taping now has allowed the casting directors to even take another step further back.
Yeah, for sure.
And in certain ways it's good because they can see more people,
mm-hmm.
right? They can look at more self-tapes, or at least at the first 5 seconds of more self-tapes.
Right, right.
But in other ways, we don't even get to go in the room. We don't get to show them who they're going to be working with and who we are as a person, which makes a difference when you're spending 16 hours a day shooting something. No, and then take away the gesture of shaking somebody's hand and looking them in the eye.
Right, and their face is covered.
Their face is covered. I mean, it's just everything's up against it, But again, what do you do?
No,
we react. We react and we change and we adapt. And it's there's not a person in this world right now who's not going through that in some way or another.
Absolutely.
We all have to. So.
All right. So talk to me about your Grey's Anatomy experience, because it was a big deal. I will admit, I'm one of the 11 people in the world that doesn't watch the show. I saw stuff online. So you played this very large obese man, which I want to find out how that all happened.
Well, I ate a lot, dude. It was tough. I mean, because I only had two weeks to get to the 750 pounds. Jeez. No, it was one of those things. I got the audition, and obviously it was going to be a fat suit and situation. But it was a really good role. It was really well written and thought out and just heart wrenching, and showed up, and it was on, sitting there against six guys, all of which were on TV shows at the time. So sure. I said, well, I'm just going to go for broke. And I broke a rule in that a lot of times we have the chairs, so you can sit or stand.
Yep.
Well, I moved the chair and I sat down against the wall, basically laid on the floor like I would be in a bed.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, well, let us adjust the camera. And they adjusted the camera, and then I went for it. And I think that's that kind of choice is what ended up getting me the role.
Sure.
Just because I didn't care. That I was like, right. No, obviously they can go with any of these guys and have some name recognition. But so I've got to do what's going to show them the way I'm going to do it.
Right.
Which is great. I was thrilled to get it. And then we went through about 2-week process of body casting, head casting, everything. And the guys, the special effects guys, were just phenomenal, top notch.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. I went back in a couple times for fittings and then showed up on the day, and they said, okay, your call. I think my first call was the 3 a.m. call. It was a 5.5-hour makeup process.
Whoa.
Because it was two fat suits, and then basically everything starting from under my eyes all the way down to my ankles.
Wow.
Because I was in a hospital bed, and then they also have me get up in the show, and I'm walking around. So everything needed to be to look like this 800-pound guy. So it was quite intense. And the funny story, the first day, everybody's just wants it to be right. Everybody there just wanted it to be right. I wanted it to be right. So I'm all intense, and I'm sitting in the chair, and I'm just trying to relax. And I know that once the 5.5 hours is up, I still have about 8 hours left to shoot.
Yeah.
Put on the fats. I went to the bathroom, put on the fat suits, and they're doing all the makeup. And, so I get to set, and then I realize, I have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, no.
And they had forgotten that. And I had kind of forgotten that. Luckily, that first day was not intensely long.
Yeah.
And so I made it through. And as soon as it took 5.5 hours to get it, about 1.5 hours to get out of it.
Oh, my God.
So as soon as I was out of it, to the point where I could, I went to the bathroom. And I said, well, I guess we're going to have to figure this out. Oh, yeah, we're already talking about it. We'll have something for you tomorrow. And I go home that night thinking, well, what could they have? What could they possibly do? And I apologize for the graphic nature of this, but they had an external catheter ready for me the next day. So I said, well, that's all fine and dandy. Yeah, I can put that on. And it's a hose that runs all the way down your leg. And then they put a little escape hatch at the bottom of my leg for this hose to come out of. And I said, but I'm in two huge fat suits. I can't reach down there. Oh no, we've taken care of that. Meet Joe, your PA.
Literally PA.
Literally, right. Right. Literally PA. And I profusely started apologizing to this guy.
Oh my God.
And he was a PA on the show, but it turns out that he had been a nurse's assistant before.
Oh,
so
wow.
he was very, very funny about it all, and couldn't have made it, again, just all nice people. They made it a very interesting, but odd experience. But so I was trapped in there and then the rest of the days we had some very long days. So it's a good thing that they thought that up.
Like, okay, so once it was literally a big giant fat suit, and you were trying, like walking back to your trailer or your dressing room to lunch,
whole thing was a process and also I couldn't stay in one position longer than 10 minutes because the weight was distributed on my shoulders. And it was about 75 pounds of weight on my shoulders. And then when I would lay down to relieve that weight, then the weight would go to the chest.
Yeah.
And about 75 pounds of pressure on the chest. So every 10 minutes I had to change positions and move. But the director of that show was a guy named Tom Verica or Verica.
Oh, and yeah. I never
know. Yeah. Who was an actor, who's been an actor for years and now has moved into directing, still acts on Shonda's shows as well. But I was so thankful to have him because he was an actor. And so he knew what I was going through.
Yep.
And he made every concession to give me a chance to get the right performance out, despite all the external stuff that was going on.
Wow.
It was something.
Did you have any moments where you were just like, what the hell did I get myself into?
No, I'm a glutton for punishment. Okay. I loved every minute of it. I mean, but yes, it was torture to walk. And I didn't even have a trailer because I couldn't even gotten into a trailer with all that stuff on. So I would just go back whenever I had downtime, I would just go back into the makeup room and they would put me on this couch and then, I just keep switching positions. And it was
crazy.
Kind of weird,
but
it was good. And I'm happy to do that. I love doing that stuff. I mean, Cirque on its own, Cirque, you do about an hour and a half to 2 hours of makeup before each show.
Sure.
Anyway. So, and that's all. Yourself, you're doing it yourself.
So how did this start for you? How did this whole thing come to be for you?
You mean acting in general?
Yes.
Oh God.
Where are you from?
I'm from New Orleans originally.
Okay.
Yeah, from New Orleans and left. My dad got transferred after my freshman year of high school up to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been interested in theater and done a little theater in New Orleans, but it wasn't very big there.
Sure.
And we went up to Chicago into a massive high school with a theater program with like acting 1 and 2, directing, technical theater. And they did a lot of shows. And so I got heavily involved and I was always still playing sports and everything, but I just loved being on stage and thought about it as a profession, but was not really, considering it. Because of the whatever.
Right.
And then I got decided to go major at Louisiana State University, go back down there for computer science engineering.
Okay.
Had a scholarship, as a matter of fact, to go for computer science engineering. So I went back down there and after about 3 months decided this computer thing, I don't think it's really going to take off. I should do something much more civilized, like acting. and of course that was 1983.
Oh my God.
When computers were just starting to come out. And
wow.
And I really didn't have that thought. I didn't care. I got down there and realized and I'm sure you've had this realization that we all had that I got to do this.
Yeah.
This is what I have to do. So I changed schools. That's when I transferred to Ohio University, which is where I met Matt Glaive and we were.
Oh my God. No, I didn't realize it went back there.
Yeah. We both transferred in as sophomores. So we were both new to and they had a conservatory program up there.
Wow.
And so all these people in our class had been there already during freshman year. And here's two guys that had transferred in and we were the two new guys. And we happened to do the first day of our first class, Matt and I did an improv together.
Wow. Because
we were the new guys and we've been best friends ever since.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So,
that's crazy.
And yeah. And then I just, it was kind of put blinders on and just, I've never wanted to do anything else. I think I probably could have been happy doing other things.
Sure.
I certainly could have done other things, but nothing makes me as happy as acting and being in this, creative profession. And also I love the people in this profession. I mean, you just don't meet this kind of people in other walks of life. I'm sure they're out there, but overall the people we meet, the people we get to work with, just bar none, some of the best people in the world.
Now I'm sure you, just like everybody else, had to have those other jobs in order to be an actor. What were some of the other jobs that you've done through the years in order to support your acting career?
I've been very fortunate. Yeah. I've been very fortunate in that I haven't had another job other than acting since 92. So I'm on a roll.
Yeah.
But, you know, never say never.
Right.
Chick-fil-A may be right around the corner for me. I don't know. But I did, you know, I did all the restaurant stuff. I bartended and managed restaurants and bounced. And gosh, what else did I do? I think one time when I was living here before, I was actually a limousine driver.
Nice.
But it was not, it wasn't like I was working for a company. I worked for a company that they would call you and you would go pick up the keys to somebody's car, go get their car in the garage, then go pick them up in their car.
Oh my gosh.
Drive them around, do whatever they would need you to do.
Right.
Then they go to a play, you wait, then you drive them home, and then you go drop off their car. Now, if you don't think that was nerve-wracking.
No, right.
When you're driving around in these people's personal, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollar car.
Oh, my God.
And you're driving around New York City.
Yes.
It was. I didn't last too long at that. Not for bad reasons, but it was just too nerve-wracking. I didn't want that responsibility.
No, hell no. Wow, that's
but,
nuts.
But other than that, I guess, really just the bar and restaurant scene.
Now, were you and Matt in New York and then LA together? Was it like a partnership where it's like, hey, I'm going to New York. Okay, I'm going to meet you there. Hey, let's go to LA. Was that
kind of, sort of, at different times? I was ready to try LA. So I went to LA and Matt said, come stay with me. I got there on a Sunday night and I believe Matt, Tim Ross, another couple friends of ours. We went out to Spaghetti Factory and had a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Got extremely drunk, of course, went back to Matt's house and fell asleep. And then that night is the night of the huge earthquake.
Oh, wow.
The 7.2 Whoa. Earthquake in 1994.
Wow.
Yes. And wow. So to show you how dumb I am, I stayed. I stayed in LA. So I really shouldn't move anywhere because earthquake, now the pandemic.
Yes.
Just God help me if I move to Omaha, what'll happen in Omaha. Just,
okay. As much
stay
as I like
where you are, Jerry.
Don't come to Charlotte. Please don't come to Charlotte.
Do not come to North Carolina. But so then from then on, you know, I was in LA and Matt was in LA and I lived there up until I left for Chicago, so middle of 2018.
Now, why did you decide to leave LA? Because you were doing pretty well there.
I was, just a change.
Yeah.
We were really hoping. We had been in the process of that show, Heartbreak Hotel, for about 4 years, mm-hmm. all the way from backers auditions through a production in LA, a production in Algonquin Playhouse, a regional production in Maine. Okay. And then we really thought that the guy who was running and had created it was going to wise up and realize he had a moneymaker on his hands, because he did. It was all about early Elvis. I was playing the Colonel. Mm-hmm. The guy that was playing Elvis was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just a dead ringer, but not just in the looks, but in the way he sang, the way he moved, the way he acted. And so we thought that we had a good shot of it being a good long sit-down run in Chicago. And everything pointed that way. And I just thought, you know what? I've been in LA a long time. I like change. Sure. Part of the reason I got into acting is because things change and the mm-hmm. next job is always different from what you have.
Right.
And so I picked up and left and I'll go back. I think that I'll probably end up back out there. But I'm waiting for Matt to leave until I go back, just because I feel like the town's not big enough for both of us, you know, as far as ego goes. I think everybody in LA has that thing, you know,
sure.
but usually for me, it was the job that was the impetus to go and to change a little bit.
Sure.
And frankly, I probably would have considered just going back to LA from Chicago
mm-hmm.
when Chicago, you know, was done. But because we were already then had lived in the city in Chicago for a year, I was like, well, if there is a time to go back to New York, now, of course, this is pre-pandemic. I didn't know. But if there is a time, this would be it, because we're kind of city. We had sold my house. It sold a bunch of stuff and really downsized.
Sure.
So I said, if there's a time, this would be it. And and frankly, I'm still very happy. I hate the fact that the pandemic's happened for a lot of reasons, but I'm still happy we're here. I'm looking forward to what I think will be a pretty big renaissance over the summer and into the fall, hopefully with with arts and hopefully culture as well.
Of course.
You know, happening when we get out of this thing. So it'll be a good time to be here, and it'll be a very interesting time to be in New York City. So.
Well, Jerry, I can't thank you enough for coming and, you know, doing this podcast interview with me, taking the time to talk with me. It's really good to see you again. Actually, because I've known who you are and we did meet, like, I've seen you a lot. Like, I would see your name come up in the opening credits of a show and I was like, oh, Jerry's going to be great. Yay. So I've seen a lot of your stuff. So it's good to see you again and talk with you. And I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this. Hopefully you will be part of, yes, like you said, the rebuilding and restructuring of New York instead of the destruction of a
city. Right, right. Because I did probably cause it, so I should do something to help it rebuild. Well, thanks for having me. I don't know. I don't know who's interested in this. I will tell my family, but God, they've stopped watching me a long time ago. So I appreciate you thinking that I was worthy of your time and your podcast.
This was great. It was absolutely great. This has been You May Have Seen with Jerry Kernian. Thanks so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout out in the next episode.